on, Jim. Get into it. Well, welcome, everybody. This is the Camera Life Podcast. It's the Random Photography Show. It's the 7th of April, if you can believe it. We're coming to you live from... where are we coming from? Victoria and New South Wales in Australia today. And we'll get to our cast of characters in just a moment. But this is the Camera Life brought to you by the lovely team at Lucky Straps in Bendigo, Victoria, makers of fine, probably the finest leather camera straps on the planet. Head to the site if you haven't already lately.
Sometimes weird ones, but mostly fine leather straps. Sometimes
that one's not for sale, by the way. That's going into the Lucky Straps Museum.
No, limited edition of one.
We might bring it out on the Tokyo Christmas trip, but that's about it. limited use.
Just we're joined today.
Hey,
I said, message me if you want to buy it. I'll sell it.
Yeah,
yeah. You stay away from my straps
before the next beef up, please. Just get rid of it. But yeah, this is the Camera Life. Thanks for joining, everybody. Don't forget to like and subscribe and hit the bell button so you get notified when we do episodes, because sometimes we just throw some random stuff into the mix just to make sure you're all awake. But we're joined tonight by a new friend of the show, Samantha, or Sam Olson. Sam, welcome to the Camera Life.
Thanks, boys.
Hey, Sam.
Thanks, Sam.
That's very presumptuous of you.
Well, it's nice not to have a sausage fest for a whole... episode.
Yeah, trying to pretty up the show a little bit. It's good.
Yeah, it's true.
I don't know about that, but certainly change the sausage fest for the day.
That's right. I'm sure Jim's been called pretty in his time. now, Sam, we've got you on the show tonight because you and I have been chatting throughout the week.
We have.
Trying to solve a problem. Mm-hmm. And we thought, let's get you on the show to talk about your current projects. And we're going to get to that soon. But just before we talk about your project, your book that's coming out, just tell us a little bit about who you are. We're not going to do a full interview, but just tell us who you are, what you do, and a little bit about your background.
I spent 17 years in the Army as a nurse, deployed a couple of times, the last two Afghanistan, and was looking eventually one day to become a professional photographer. I actually was really passionate about education. So I was always wanting to go that way, but until I figured I had to throw myself into the deep end of really working as a photographer before I could teach it. And I figured there's nothing better to do that than weddings, because weddings, you have to do a bit of everything.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. Preaching to the choir, sister. Oh, I've so wanted to say that on this show for so long.
Yes.
Finally, sister.
Oh, so true. but unfortunately, as I was in about my 15th or 16th year and had a lot of problems with chronic pain, a lot of injuries through my career, and ended up with PTSD, which sort of hastened my exit out of the Army and into civilian life. And I've sort of worked around weddings and portraits for the last 10 odd years. And that led on to COVID and a project I had been had on the back burner for a while, thinking, oh, this would be awesome to write a book on the Great Ocean Road and some of the great locations that don't seem to be covered in lots of the magazines or books, and even the blog sites have 10 to 15 locations, and they all seem to be about the same location. Mm. And
yeah, I think we call that 20 feet from where the bus stops, pretty much.
Usually.
Yeah.
Or if you get ChatGPT to write the article and say, write an article that has the top 10 photo spots of the Great Ocean Road. It just copies the other articles.
I only found ChatGPT 3 weeks ago for the very first time.
It's scary.
I know.
Justin has ongoing arguments with it over photography. Yeah. It's quite hilarious.
Very regularly. I actually thought about just publishing the chat, the transcripts every now and then, just throwing them up on some site or something. That's like my ongoing fight with ChatGPT.
You should get ChatGPT to write the book for you.
Well, it can do anything.
That's cheating.
It doesn't do a great job of it. Before we start picking on ChatGPT too much, there's some good evenings to happen. Good evening, Philip Johnson.
Hey, Philip.
Good evening, Brett Woodison and hey, Ian Brett. Thompson.
Hi, Brett.
And, hey, guys. And Brett Woodison again. And Bruce Moyle and Brett Woodison. Oh, no, that he says evening, Bruce. This is going well. And then Tony's there. Hey, Tony.
Hey, Tony.
Lawn. Yeah.
Hi, Elena, too. Elena.
Where is
she? Said good evening again.
He's everywhere in the chat.
Yeah, she just said good evening to everyone else. She didn't say it to us, so not pulling up her chat.
This is my favorite comment so far. Greg manifesting a trip to Japan. Look, I can't afford to get this. So, you know, if it's going to happen, it's going to be on the boss's dime. I'm sorry, Elena.
We're going to make it happen.
I know. Can you fit in my suitcase next year?
We got to
fit. Are you going next year?
Are you going?
Yeah.
I can fit in anything if it's got Japan involved.
Is it like a surfboard bag?
Us, no,
Jim needs a surfboard bag for a six.
He does. He's very tall.
He needs a bigger board.
I do have a snowboard bag. Would you fit in that?
No.
It's
a tight. Be a tight.
You'd carry it for
you.
Yeah, that's right. We can go snowboarding if that's your plan. I'm in.
I would love to. The pain specialist would kill me.
What's the trip for then? What's the plan?
It was on my list of places to go. And so a family reunion with a couple of family members that want to go. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, I'll go before them, do a few of the things that I want to do first, so I don't have to worry about holding them up. Mm-hmm. And then we'll have spent some time together as family.
Cool. You're going to do some photography over there too?
No, not at all. Like, there's nothing there to photograph, is there?
No. I haven't based my whole career on it.
Terrible place for photography.
Yeah, it's pretty bland.
No, it's trying to decide what lenses to bring.
Mm.
Speaking of lenses, because that is a tough decision, especially when traveling, because you don't take every single thing you own. Mm-hmm. What brand of camera system are you shooting with?
Right at the moment, the Nikon Z series.
No, God, please, no!
Finally, we've got a real photographer on the show. I've been hovering over that button.
My finger's been hovering over that since you said Nikon when we first got you on before. had to do it because Jim's on. What cameras are you using? I assume it's the Z because
a couple of Z8s.
Ah, perfect.
I moved from the D5 and a D850, which were great for weddings, and it wasn't until Nikon started with their Z8, Z9 that I thought they'd actually got serious about mirrorless.
Yeah.
And they were actually producing a comparable or better camera. Mm.
Yeah. To the D850. I would echo that too.
Yeah, sounds like
to
exactly what
both
did.
The D5 and the D850. Yeah. Both of them are...
I think, like Canon, they were quite late to the party. I think they thought it was a Sony fad.
Yeah, I had some Sonys that I bought.
Yeah, a lot of people did, and now Nikon and Canon are killing it in the mirrorless market. Like, they're really the standout performers.
Well, I'm selling my Sony off now to go back to full time. That way, I'm not going between two systems. Yeah, I just prefer the Nikon in the hand. Mm-hmm. Just feels a lot better for me. Mm-hmm.
So just out of curiosity, what's your preliminary thinking around what you want to take with you to Japan? I assume it's just one camera body, not two.
Oh, no, two.
Oh, two.
Two. One will stay in the safe in the hotel just in case one fails. So the other ones, or perhaps maybe at night time, maybe I want two at night. I don't know.
You'll hopefully be pretty safe with a mirrorless. Like, there's less to go wrong.
You would think.
Yeah.
But it's sort of like it's a once-in-a-lifetime trip.
Yeah, true.
And there's not...
Don't get me wrong. My first trip to Japan, I took everything I owned.
It's very tricky, too. If you were to lose a camera body, it's hard to find a shop or anywhere where you could purchase a replacement. Tricky to find in the
but it is stressful. Like, and I get it. Like I said, my first trip there, I took two camera bodies. I mean, they were Fuji, so they were much lighter. But you know, I took every lens I had and two camera bodies and all the stuff I just didn't need. But by the last trip, I only took like a little point and shoot
because I'm a street photographer. I don't have much else other than that. So it wasn't really a deal breaker if I didn't have the best camera I owned. But I found that to be better. But anyway, good luck carrying all that gear, Sam.
Well, I've nailed it down to, I think, 5 lenses. So that should be good. That's better than normally.
The one that we found, well, I assume Jim as well, but that we found super useful, this is back when we were shooting Nikon DSLRs, but they have the equivalent still, is the 20mm 1.8. No, the 20mm for Tokyo.
At
nighttime was pretty fun because it was that little bit wide, not super wide, but wide enough to get buildings and stuff in. But if you find yourself in a darker spot, off one of the side streets or whatever, 1.8 lets in a ton of light.
It was wide enough to do.
Yeah.
I was going to bring the 58mm 1.4 for the old style. Well, I'll have the 14-24 2.8.
Okay. Yep.
But I just love that old. Well, it's not that old, but it's the old F series F mount lenses. That 58. There's just something. I hate 50mm focal length, but that 58. 1.4 was just lovely. Don't know why.
Justin and I have shot extensively with the 58 1.4.
How many photos do you reckon we've taken with that lens? Hundreds of thousands, maybe.
No.
We both had one.
Justin had one, and then I saw how beautiful it was, so I got one too. And but in saying that, I heard you say that you didn't like the 50. I changed and bought the 50 1.2, the Z mount, and it's
heavy.
Yeah, but it is heavy. It is heavy. It's different to the 58, but it's pretty way heavy. Better in every single way. That 58 was tough to use. It doesn't you've got to learn how to get it to focus and stuff like that.
And it's soft.
It's not a perfect lens, but it is a beautiful lens.
It's definitely better, but on a Z series.
Is it?
For focusing, yeah.
Yeah. So you get the advantage of working with a Z series for focusing and then have the character of the old 58.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't find the normal 51.2 too sharp?
No, I love that it's so sharp.
Okay.
Because I can shoot it wide open, whereas the 58... it struggles. I used to shoot at 2.2 all the time, all day. Okay. But anything wider, it used to struggle to. It'd just miss a lot.
Yeah,
miss focus a lot.
Yeah, miss focus a lot.
On eyes. Yeah. But again, like that was an older system. Like you were
shooting with DSLR, D50s or D750s.
We're constantly trying to calibrate our bodies to our lenses all the time, all that sort of stuff. It was a different world. You don't have to worry about any of that stuff.
I think that's one of the best thing about mirrorless is not having to do that anywhere near as often.
No micro adjustment of focus point and all that sort of stuff. But Paul is in the comments. He says it was frustrating to wait for Canon and Nikon to put out decent mirrorless stuff, but was worth it in the end. He also says had a 5-day work trip to Japan and just took the 50mm to keep it minimal, really regretted leaving the 24-105 behind. Interesting. That's fair. Yeah, I've been enjoying the zooms. This trip that I recently just come back from, which was not to Japan, it was driving around Victoria and a very small part of New South Wales in a van. But I used a zoom basically the whole time just to test it out, and now I'm in the market for lightweight travel zooms. It's my new thing.
Wow.
Ditching the big heavy primes.
Well, I can recommend the 24-120 Nikon. That's awesome.
I've had that.
He's a Canon boy now.
The old one, but I'm Canon now. I switched.
I didn't like the new one, the old one. But yeah, you couldn't pay me to use Canon. Sorry.
Oh, I bet you.
How much?
We just seriously.
I would try almost any camera brand outside of Canon.
Really? Why? What did they do to you?
I don't like the way that they have their exposure compensation buttons positioned. I really hate it. It's something I use all the time. And the way that they make you sort of hold it and then do a dial, I'm like, seriously, what is wrong with these people?
I don't think you don't have to hold it down. Maybe that's changed on the recent ones, unless you've, I don't know.
This was an older one. This was the D5, whatever, 5D Mark four or three.
Yeah, that, it might be a little bit different. Now, I don't think I shoot it in manual anyway, so I don't know if I don't think you have to hold it down. Anyway,
have you got dials at the front and back?
Yes.
But more, is the dial at the back around the?
It's a wheel, isn't it?
It's a wheel.
It's got both.
Oh, it's got both.
So we've got the wheel, dial at the back, dial at the front. It's
okay.
It's got all.
Would like a wheel.
The wheel is really good.
Yeah, for scrolling through images, I would.
Images, the wheel is quite fun. The Canon, if you haven't shot Canon, you don't know the wheel. That's crazy good.
Yeah,
it's fun. It's nice. Yeah. And you know the best feature on any Canon, maybe not the best feature. Their sensors are probably important, but the best ergonomic feature on any Canon is on the R3 and now on the R1. It's not on anything else. Hang on, I'll show you.
Talking about like the back dial button, I actually wore one of them out on my, I think it was the last D850. Like I wore it smooth.
Oh, wow.
And they've got quite aggressive little lumps on them.
There's there's this AF on button here, but it has a photo sensitive like touchpad kind of thing on it. So if I just move my thumb like this while it's on the button, that's a button. If I just move that, actually, I should just set it to I'd have to put a lens on it. It moves the focus point just by like sliding my thumb over a button so it's like that a I'm not pad. Pressing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's like a trackpad.
That is a good feature.
But the size of a small round button and you just...
How accurate is it, do you think?
It's amazingly accurate.
Wow, that's cool. A couple of comments in the chat. Let's jump to some comments. So just getting back to Paul, Brett asked, Paul, did you miss a really good shot you regret now while he was on this trip in Japan just with the 50mm? And Paul's replied, Brett, yes, landscapes. Street was okay with the 50, but I prefer the 28 pancake for that now.
Okay.
So once he sort of got out of the urban jungle, or maybe even just get some city scenes.
The 28, it's good focal length.
That's a good one.
28's awesome.
Mm.
And Dave, did you frog? Sorry, Sam, let me just get this one out. I just purchased an old 58.14 Minolta Vintage. It was made in 1970. Same age as me. Rock or PF, I'm going back in time.
Nice, certainly are, my friend.
What have you got, Justin?
I don't know if you can see the focal point. If I get this in the right light, that it's sort of
can you bring it closer? Sliding around.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, wow.
So move my thumb around and that I can put good. It anywhere, but I don't, that's whereas really it's got the joystick as well here, but the joystick, it moves at the speed.
It's much slower. Yeah.
It's slower, whereas this, it moves at wherever I put my thumb, it moves. It's so good. I wanted them to put it through the range, but they've kept it for the R1. And
I imagine it's an expensive feature. Like it's probably pretty high end tech.
I'd pay for
What'd it. What'd you do to your thumb, Justin, speaking of thumbs? Your thumb's all banged up.
Huh? Is it?
Oh, it looked all banged up to me. Maybe you just...
Oh, it did. Yeah. Don't know. Probably exercising.
You've joined the random photography show, Sam. We talk about cameras, thumbs,
whatever. Oh, I know.
Whatever.
No, listen.
It goes any direction.
Yes, but Justin, do you use back button focusing?
I don't as much. We used to flat out on DSLR all the time.
Yeah.
Was the only way to roll. And then since I've shot mirrorless, I use it less and less because it tracks so well. So I find myself just half pressing the shutter like traditionally, but it's tracking the subject. So it depends. If I switch to a fixed focus point and I'm sort of, I go back to that back button style. But otherwise, most of the time, like if I shot a wedding now, I would probably not use back button focus. I would just use eye tracking and just let the camera do the work. What are you using now, Jim? Now that you've switched,
still
are you
back
still
button.
Back button?
Yeah. No, I haven't changed that. Just still. Yeah.
But do you find that you're holding it down a lot more because it's tracking? Like you basically just hold it there and you just move the camera as you're repositioning and reframing?
No, I still treat it. I still like to move the square myself a lot.
Do you?
Yeah, I'm a little bit old school in that way.
Old school.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're running two Z8s as well now.
Yeah.
Very cool. Moving right along. Now, Sam, you're currently working on a project that's completely unrelated to your usual working gig of shooting weddings, events, portraiture up in Sydney. You've authored and prepared a book.
Mm-hmm. I have.
On the Great Ocean Road. I'm just going to bring up a screen very quickly, guys, just while I've got this here. And, Sam, I'd love to hear from you, if I can find it. Tell us about A Photographer's Guide, The Great Ocean Road and Otways.
It is a 750-page mammoth.
That's big.
Yeah.
It's massive.
So the first probably third of the book is designed to focus on all the skills that you need, both photography skills and understanding weather and tides, stuff that is really crucial for shooting well in that particular region. And then the last two thirds of the book is 152 locations with every single piece of information that a photographer could possibly want to know, like, how many stairs to get to my location? What are the GPS coordinates? What's the shoot direction? What is the best time of day to visit this location? What lenses should I take to this location? What other accessories? Do I want tripod spikes? Do I want a camera cover? Because this particular location seems to be get a lot more sea spray. What tides are best for shooting? What tides are safe for access? Everything.
Wow. So it's fair to say that you've come to this location, Sam, somewhere along the Great Ocean Road, which for those of you watching along that aren't familiar or are from overseas, the Great Ocean Road is a incredibly popular and naturally wonderful and beautiful region of Victoria. It's along the coast. I remember going down to the Great Ocean Road as a kid in my sort of late teens, early adulthood. A friend of mine had a shack. It was literally a shack behind the Torquay pub. And we got our licenses. We'd go down the Great Ocean Road pretty much every weekend we could. So this book is pretty much an end-to-end guide of everything you need to know to have a successful shoot anywhere along the Great Ocean Road. But I think more than that, Sam, we were talking about on the phone the other day, and you've mentioned it just in your earlier, that you know there's 152 shooting locations, and many of those locations are significantly, well, not significantly, but they're more interesting, and they take you into, a more promising location than just getting off the tourist bus, walking 20 feet, taking a snap and getting on the bus and going home. There's a lot more to it. It takes you to some very obscure locations that a lot of people wouldn't know about. But as you said, it gives you the step-by-step guide to get there, find the spot, you know what you're looking for, understand what's required to get a particular type of shot for that particular location. How long has it taken you, Sam, to put this all together?
Yeah.
We're at about 4.5 years now.
Wow.
That's awesome.
So the first year was pure research. I visited every single website that I could find that had anything to do with the Great Ocean Road, looking for locations to start to explore, and then moved on to Google Satellite Maps and went, oh, okay, I can see a rock platform down there. I wonder if I can get to that. And literally scoured the entire coastline in that region looking for anything that could possibly be shot, and then spent just over a year going back and forth along the Great Ocean Road, like checking all the sites out, and a lot got thrown out because they were just average. But 152 is what I narrowed it down to. There was a couple that I would have liked to put, but for conservation of the area, it wasn't advisable to put a location that had no, the only access would be destroying parts of the coastline. Yeah. And if you put that in a book,
not a good
you
thing.
Encourage people to go there. It's one thing if you do the research and find yourself there.
Mm-hmm.
Some areas are maybe a bit controversial. One in particular near Port Campbell. But there just has so many visitors there anyway that I'm not creating anything that a lot of people can't find for themselves.
Sure. Mm-hmm. So, Sam, take us back a little bit further. What is your connection with the Great Ocean Road in the Otways area? You know, you're currently in Sydney. You live and work in Sydney. I assume you live in Sydney. You're running a photography business there.
Yep.
What is the draw to that region of Victoria?
A couple of things. I was coming back from a trip to Uluru and all of Central Australia, and I hadn't been to the Great Ocean Road. It had been on my bucket list for over a decade. And I came back along and spent about a week going back and forth, and I got down to the bottom of a waterfall and realised I didn't have the lens that I wanted that was sitting in my car at the top. Mm-hmm. But the waterfall, it was like 300-odd stairs to get down there. And with my knee problems and my back problems, the idea of hiking all the way back up and then back down and then back up again was not feasible. Mm-hmm. So I thought, oh, wouldn't it be great if someone wrote a book about this? And that's how it started. And then I learned a bit more also about the Great Ocean Road, how it was created by World War I diggers, and it was part of their return from war. Mm-hmm. By giving them a constructive profession, particularly one that was outdoors. A lot of men who returned from war in Europe had something physical and hard labor to go and put their body towards with the trauma that comes back from being in war.
Yep.
And so that sort of really spoke to me. And also for a healing part, I don't think there's anything better than being out in nature as a landscape photographer. You really mm-hmm. have to slow down. And that concentration when you're in the moment of being in the seascape and it's sunrise and you can hear the ocean and you're focusing through the viewfinder on exactly what you want to frame up, that literally is the definition of mindfulness,
yep.
which is mm-hmm. one of the management strategies of PTSD.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I like that.
It's, Brendan yeah, it's Waits. So cool.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
World's Brendan. Largest war memorial. Very true.
Yeah. Yeah.
Brendan, a Great Ocean Road extraordinaire.
Now, you've been working on the book for a little while now, Sam. Mm-hmm. So where are you at with getting this to publication and into people's hands? Because, you know, we talked about on the phone a lot and just working with, you know, from my experience working with camera clubs and doing some community outreach for Lucky Straps, proud sponsor of today's show. You know, there's a lot of people that love to head down to this area because, I mean, it's beautiful. There's a lot of rich heritage there, as you've just described and as Brendan's pointed out. There's a lot of heritage there for people that have a relationship with the veteran side of things. So obviously you've found a love for it. How many times do you think you've been down there?
8 or 9.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was going down for usually about 2 months at a time.
Wow.
It's huge.
Yeah, so maybe over a year in total of time
research.
Along the Great Ocean Road shooting.
Definitely.
In the book, are there images from every location?
Yeah. Yeah, oh, there's cool. Over 1,100 images and color diagrams.
So landscape photography connects us with nature. Okay.
I think Greg's playing. Are you playing with the...
Can you guys hear me?
Can hear you? Yeah.
We're having some technical Someone's difficulties. Playing.
I'm sorry. I don't know what I did. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Sam,
such
I had a question
professional show.
From earlier when you said that sort of what launched the book was not having the right equipment when you got down to the spot. How, like, what are you packing now in your kit? Because I guess some of the locations when you are going there for the first time, you might not necessarily know what you need, but Are you going back to them multiple times, or is it generally you, like now you've got an idea of like exactly what you might want from, yeah, I guess, I think, from the research that you've done?
I think you become a little bit, as you become more experienced, you understand more, a lot more what you do and don't want to take in your pack. Mm-hmm. And I think that would help me for future locations, but for the book, often I would go down there for a, what I call a recce, which is a, I don't know if that's only a military term, but it, I would often go down with either a 28 to 300 on the old D850, mm-hmm. or I would just go down with my phone.
Yeah.
And with the different focal length you can get on the phone, I was able to find out, okay, I think I'm going to need this lens or that lens, so that when I came back, I had those lenses with me. The more difficult ones were, I have a 19 mil tilt shift,
mm-hmm.
and that was useful in a couple of the locations that are really challenging to get a good image.
Yeah,
just because of how close you are to the waterfall. If you've been there, you'll know how difficult Razorback is to get a really great image, because how close it is on one end to the shoot location and how far away on the other end of the Rock Island it becomes. Mm-hmm. So I found to get the entire Razorback in one shot, the 19 mil using the shift function was actually the most useful.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't want to tell people to go to one of the angles that I know can be taken, but you have to hop over fences.
Yeah, I guess you can't really be telling people that.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So it's a guide, I was looking for the best.
Yeah, guide for how to get great photos along the Great Ocean Road without doing anything dangerous or stupid.
Oh, not necessarily.
Is there like a life, danger
life is
level
not without dangers, Justin.
Yeah, is there like a out of five you've rated each spot how dangerous it is to get the good photo?
I have put some of the distinct dangers in the locations, so anything that's sketchy I've definitely listed it. But it's if there was infrastructure in place, so if there was a fence in place, I didn't want to encourage people to jump it, but a lot of the locations, particularly near Port Campbell, have no infrastructure in place.
Yeah.
So you just go come to the end of a road and there's the cliff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
fall off.
Yeah. So Sam, tell us who is this book for? Whether it buying for a friend. Sorry.
Anyone that owns a mirrorless or digital SLR, anything that you can change your focal length and potentially one that you can add filters to, is anyone who wants to go to the Great Ocean Road with that camera and take great images. But I guess also if you've got a relative that wants to travel in that region, there is no guidebook out there that will tell you, listen, here's 100 odd places just to go and check out. Even if you've got just a phone to take your photos, and it's got a photo of the location and tells you what time of day is best.
Yeah, it's pretty helpful.
So for those sort of people, it's ideal.
Brett Woodison in the comments says, hey, Brett, says, Samantha, does your book give readers an idea of the fitness needed for various locations along the road?
So all of the tracks have got the length, so the distance that you need to return to the car park, the amount of stairs that you need to go up and down, and also how difficult the track was graded.
Yeah.
That being said, all but a couple of the locations, particularly if you've got hiking poles, I think it's achievable for almost anyone. It's just going to take longer.
Yeah. So rather than you giving sort of a recommendation of a fitness level, it can be a bit subjective depending on what you say. Yeah. And you've just said, all right, well, this is the distance, this is the steps, and people can kind of make their own judgment call based on the distance and how much of up and down. Because it's probably the steps that are really one of the most difficult things.
And the soft sand.
Yeah, that's true as well. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Some of the beaches have really soft sand, and I've made sure I've listed those because, I mean, anyone that's got a bad back will know slugging a camera back over soft sand is a nightmare.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you done the maths on how many stairs you counted?
Oh, my God, I don't want to know.
I feel like it's a lot of stairs. I just saw one popped up and it was 201, and I was like, well, that's one location.
Well,
151 other ones.
I don't know. I thought what I'd done was bad enough, but then I went on a walk with a group of Lumix shooters to the Blue Mountains.
Oh, why would you go with him?
I know.
I'm joking.
Just a week ago, and they were going to do Grand Canyon, but it got rained out with the weather here, and they said, oh, we're doing the rim walk. And I thought, great, rim walk means I don't need hiking poles. I can bring my assistance dog because he won't be, like, we're not trying to navigate down any really steep tracks or anything. And 110 odd flights of stairs later, which is what my watch was telling me, I could barely move. So I think that was far worse than anything I did. There was nothing anywhere in that range that I did. There are heaps of other waterfalls and that didn't make the book because there's no trail at all to get into them. There's heaps and heaps of waterfalls in the Otways, and there's been a book written already about them. Mm-hmm. Not the photography aspects, but it's quite a thick book as well, and it gives GPS coordinates. And people who want to navigate using a GPS or map and compass and bush bash should check that book out.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to do photography, yeah, even stuff like all the different ways to take to the air. So I used a drone. I used a biplane. I did two doors off helicopter flights, two doors off light aircraft flights in that period, learning what's the different ways that somebody can get to the air, because a lot of the places there's no drone use because it's all national park.
Mm-hmm.
And so you go, well, what are your other options? And biplane was a lot of fun. My God, that was fun. But
is that not something
great. The photos look amazing.
Is it something that you can do, anyone can do? Can go to this place and pay to go up? It wasn't something that you... Yep. So I could pay to go up in a biplane.
And I've given you it, all the information in there.
Stream like a Lucky Straps or the Camera Life flag from the back. Make it a media event.
I want to do the one where you stand on top of the wing, you know, with you're in that frame thing. I thought,
Tom Cruise, I don't think that's going to happen for you, mate.
I'll hold you in front of me, Greg, and you can do
that. You know those wings are made out of fabric, don't you?
Yeah. What's that?
Those wings are made out of fabric.
Yeah, I changed my mind. I'll do the helicopter.
Yeah. So, Sam, just to recap, so with the book, and for anyone that's watching, listening along at home live with us, thank you. This is the Camera Life Podcast, the Random Photography Show. Or if you're watching this later on, check out the links. We're going to leave a link, and we're going to get to that link in just a moment. But just to recap what's in the book for people listening along, so you've got how to get to these locations, facilities available at the car park, which is often really important because, you know, sometimes after a long car ride, you don't think, oh, well, when I get there, I'm going to then hike into the wilderness potentially. What do I need? I'm going to need to fill up my water bottle. I'm going to need to, you know, so it's good to have facilities. The distance, difficulty, and walk time required to reach each chute, the ideal time of day, the weather, and tide conditions, which is really important. And that's another safety aspect that I think that the book covers, because all too often we see these stories. I don't know how many times recently, because we've had a lot of strong winds and floods, and especially in Queensland and New South Wales, people's four-wheel drives being buried in sand on the beach as the tide comes in. Like, you see it a lot. Mm. Other safety concerns around that specific area. So, you know, hazards to look for and things like that. Specific equipment required. A photography rating, 1 to 5 stars as to how good this spot is. And what you can do with it. Shoot notes let you know whether you can bring dogs, which obviously for someone like you, Sam, that's really important, having a service animal. And also, that's
irrelevant for me because I'm allowed to bring him anyway.
Oh, because it's I know.
Oh. But yeah. I'm just saying, just for people with dogs in general. Sorry, I didn't mean to dismiss that there. And also around the drone flying, which we've just discussed. So, Sam, this book at the moment, it is currently, it's still pending. You're in the process of backing it on Kickstarter.
Yeah, so I've probably spent about $60,000, $70,000 to date, but it's been over a period of time. Mm-hmm. And now to bring it to the last hurdle is another $30,000 to $40,000 to get it mm-hmm. printed. There's no print on demand for a book that's 750 pages and A4 sort of dimensions. Mm-hmm. So there's no other options to bring it into the quality of print that it deserves without doing offset printing overseas. Yeah. I have a Brisbane publisher that has everything ready to go, and all we need is another 25,000. I think we've got 25,000 in a month to essentially pre-sell books. So the way Kickstarter works is you essentially buy a book, an ebook, whatever you like, a package, and you say, I want to buy this book. I understand that I won't get it for, say, 3 to 4 months. Mm-hmm. But in return, the creator gives you a discount usually or throws in something for free. Mm-hmm. And you just realize you're pre-ordering that product. Mm-hmm. But the only problem is that Kickstarter says, well, you have to, as the creator, have to tell me how much your creation is going to cost to completely fund. And if you don't get that money, if you don't get to that, you obviously can't go ahead with your project. So you're not going to get a cent of that money. So
it goes back. It goes back to everybody. If it's not,
no, they don't even take it.
Yeah, that's right. So there's
the pledges are cancelled.
The pledges are cancelled. Yeah. So if people back this project and it doesn't get fully funded to where you can make it happen, it's not like anyone's out of pocket. It's not a not a gamble. It's either all in or don't worry about it. Kind of.
Yeah. So there's a couple of different versions or rewards, as they call them, on Kickstarter, available. You've got just the ebook version on its own. Is that correct?
For $39.
You've then got the unsigned version of the book at $79.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've also got a signed copy by yours truly. You've got a couple of different tiers. You've got a bronze tier, which gives you, is that the ebook and the physical?
Hard. Yep, that's correct.
Yep. And then you've got a silver tier, which is that two copies?
I think so. That sounds about right. And an ebook, I think.
And the ebook. And then you've got a signed collector's edition. That's kind of sweet, isn't it?
Yeah, so that's different book. So it's the original book with about, I think it's 32 extra pages with additional images, a lot of aerial images. There's a bit more personal stuff about working with an assistance dog.
Yep. Recovering from PTSD. Yep.
From PTSD, yep. And it has a fabric cover with a slip-in box.
Yep.
And
premium.
Like a where they build a stamp and they put a stamp and an input foil in it. Like you would for a wedding.
We know a few things about stamping things as foil.
We've stamped a few things with foil. Don't you worry.
Jim's fingers are burnt to little stubs as a result.
Jim will be doing it tomorrow morning, hopefully.
Yeah.
But I do need to emphasize one thing on this, that postage is extra. So that's probably where I'm having the biggest issue, that people don't understand that there's literally next to no, there's very little markup in this, in these books. So I want to make it as affordable to as many people, but to do that, Kickstarter also says, well, what's the postage going to be? So if I was only shipping to Australia, it wouldn't be a problem. I could just build that into the cost. But because I'm shipping to a number of places around the world, shipping is always going to be extra. And a lot of people come to the cart and then they go, oh, you want to charge me for shipping? Oh, no, I don't want that there.
Yeah, you, Sam.
Yeah.
I'm like, seriously?
Yeah.
You're killing me. But apart from that.
I think we're in a world, Sam. This is, I mean, I'm not going to try to mansplain you or tell you how to suck eggs. And from my evaluation, I see that, we live in a world where Amazon can afford to ship for free. And a lot of the stores that we deal with now can afford to ship for under $10 because they have volume behind them. And they build it into their You know, they build it into their fat and, you know, into
if
their...
If people knew how much we spend on shipping to send camera straps outside of Australia, where we include free DHL Express, I don't think anyone knows how much that costs.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money. I do.
Yeah, you do.
And we're shipping camera straps, not books. Not 750-page books. Yeah.
This is a big, heavy book. What does it weigh, Sam?
Just under 3 kilos.
Do you have a copy?
I don't have a copy. No, I can't get one.
You can't even get it like a pre. Nope. They don't do that.
Sample.
No, we one-off. Offset printing. The cost in offset printing is the setup.
Yeah.
So if I could buy 50,000 copies, if you could fund that amount, you could make the price half the price that I'm selling for now. But it's really very much the setup cost is so expensive, which is why they won't do on-demand sort of printing. They just can't do the quality. They can do a really cheap digital and it looks shite.
Yeah. Do you know anyone that works in a large organization or maybe a government department? You can just sneak in there, use their photocopier card and just print off a few copies, you know.
That might take a while. Not a bad idea.
Yeah.
I must admit, everyone, I have had the privilege of looking at an early version of the ebook, and it's all looking smashing. I can't believe how much detail you've managed to incorporate into this book, Sam. Every page is, if you love technical photography and you want to learn everything about landscape photography, and you're quite happy to learn about it in an area like the Great Ocean Road or the Otways, then this is definitely the definitive guide for you. So Sam, you've got a month
there. It really is. I could only see what was on the website, obviously, but even just like from the plane, you said in one of the, be careful, the exhaust, the plane exhaust goes out here, so you will get a blurred image where the heat from the exhaust, which you just wouldn't think about before you get in the plane, you get home and you go, oh, if I had have known that, but you've put those little things in, those little tips that I think people will appreciate, because I wouldn't have thought of that at all. Maybe you would have seen it when you're shooting, probably not, because you're bouncing around in a plane and you get home and you go, oh, that's frustrating, I've got this little blurred spot down the bottom, what is it? Whereas
you start cleaning your sensor and all your lenses and... Yeah,
you go in with that.
I tell you, that doesn't stop me from making stupid ass mistakes. The reason I did two doors off plane flights, the first one, I went to set my, I had two bodies, and the one that had the 70 to 200, I went to set at 1/320 of a second shutter speed, and end up. Oh, sorry, 1/320 of a second.
Yep.
And I set it instead at 1/32,000th of a second, which I didn't even know my camera was capable of because none of my old ones were.
Yeah.
Like I was used to it topping out at 8,000. And now now all these images that had the beautiful light have ISOs of like 16, 3200. And with the 40-odd megapixels, you're not getting the same clean file that you were at, say, 16 or 18 megapixels, 22 of the D5. Mm-hmm. So that even with noise reduction software that everybody loves to rave about nowadays, I don't think the high noise capacity is quite as good as it was in the digital SLR era.
The D5 was a killer for high ISO. I loved that camera.
It was, the D4S was even better.
Because
I had mine stolen and replaced with a D5, and I was disappointed. I went back to Nikon and said, hey, is there something wrong with my copy? Because it's not as good as the last one.
They were good cameras, really good cameras.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Built like a tank.
Yeah, exactly. That's so impressive that you've been able to pull such a big thing together. I assume it was, you had to have it designed by, like, does a graphic designer put it together?
So there's a whole team at the publishers that were putting it together, and I feel sorry actually for the publisher was Clark and Mackay up in Brisbane, and oh my God, it's taken a year and a half to get to this with the publisher.
Yep.
And the Word bit was edited and done within a month or two max.
Yeah.
It's been all the layout has been since then. And mm-hmm. I feel sorry for this guy because he had no idea what he was committing to, and he committed to a fixed price up front. And he hadn't designed any book like this, and I had no concept on how bad it was going to be. Oh. And so he ended up charging me less, I think, for the Word editing than the design. Yeah. And we've spent, I want to say, 100 times more on the design than the Word editing. It's just been, I literally was up in Queensland for a month and I was coming down, I think I went down about 5 or 6 times for the entire day. Mm-hmm. And I sat with the publisher moving shit around on a page to get it right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
it's a lot of work.
It'll be worth it though.
It will be. The fruits of your labor.
Yep.
Yes. Well, we got to get it funded. We need to make sure we spread the word. If you know anybody, if you're listening, if you know photographers or people that want to buy gifts for photographers, if there's always that person that people say, what do I get for them? If you don't get them a lucky strap, get them this book. No, I'm kidding.
Missy came on board with offering to help promote the book. I did contact Nikon, but haven't heard back. But I guess I'm too small in the world of photographers to rate a email back from Nikon. I wasn't particularly surprised, in all fairness.
Nikon are they're a small team of busy people, and sometimes it can be hard to get a word back from them. So
there's how many Nikon photographers out there? Like hundreds and hundreds of thousands that would love to deal with Nikon.
Yeah.
So it doesn't surprise me at all. But I've contacted 144 camera clubs offer talks about the Great Ocean Road in return for just saying, listen, here's a bit of information about the book. If you could let your members know that for the next month, so I think it finishes the 8th of May. So I need to raise $25,000 by the 8th of May.
Yep.
So a bit, I think I've worked it out. It's about 325 books if they're the hard copies. Which is not a small amount in Australia.
No. It's a lot of books.
Yeah.
But there's a lot. That's doable. There's a lot of photography.
You put the book together. The hardest part, you put the book together.
That's right.
Yeah. You've done the...
which is why you just want to cry when you're just going, how do I let photographers know it's out there?
Yeah. And it's tough too. And it's tough to get people to buy things that they can't see and touch as well.
Yeah.
Selling things on the internet is not easy. And it takes a lot of, trust building. People worry they're not going to get it or what will it look good? You know, what is it going to have the good information in it or whatever? It's not like they're in a bookshop where they can flick through it. But I think that's what doing stuff like this is a great idea. Because once people.
But they can go to my website. You know, on my website, exactly. I do have a PDF viewer where they can flick through some pages on the book.
Oh, that's a great idea. Yep. We'll link that if it's not already. We'll link it in the show notes of this episode if you're listening back later. Otherwise, I'm assuming if you Google Samantha Olsen photography and you'll gravitate find it. To one that's got some very good wedding photography and stuff on there as well, you'll find
it. As long as you spell my last name right, you'll be okay.
Yeah. O H L S E N.
Yeah, there's only two of us in the world, so
and just on that, you know, it's a project that's put together by a local photographer, someone who's clearly done the hard yards of work. They haven't just Googled, like we talked about earlier, used ChatGPT to put the book together. You've had boots on the ground to corner. Military terms. So, you've done the hard yards to get this to where it is. And I think there's a lot of incentive there for people to back a project like this, because not only do you get a great photography book to add to your growing photography book collection, if that's what you love doing, what you love collecting. But obviously it supports local, which is something that we're really big about here at The Camera Life, and at Lucky Straps as well, being an Australian-made, Australian-owned brand. So what's next?
it brings a project to life too, Greg. That's the other thing. It's like it's not just buying local, but it's like it might mean the difference. Your book purchase might mean the difference between this thing getting funded or not. So
yeah,
exactly. It's pretty it's pretty cool. Before you get behind it. Yeah, get behind it. I was just going to say, before you move on to for whatever's next on your plan, Greg, guess who just woke up with acid reflux at 3:30 a.m. in San Francisco? Hey, David, if you're still listening, I hope I hope you can get back to sleep. And if not, you know,
stay around for a little bit.
Yeah. Well, actually, a fifth of the purchase of the book so far come from US viewers. So
you're
tuning in just in time, David.
Yeah, I think it was meant to be, David. I think that's what we're hearing.
If you're meant to be. David is a Nikon fiend. I think he owns every Nikon that it has ever been made. And who knows, maybe he'll want to come down to Australia and go along the Great Ocean Road. And if so, he might he might want to back a book too.
Why not?
What else have we got on the plans for the Random Photography Show tonight?
Well, Rick? We've got a bit of news to cover if you want to cover a bit of news.
Yeah. I like the news.
We've been talking about Nikon a bit. I don't know why, but Nikon just launched another camera.
Did they? Oh,
the Z5 Mark II.
Yeah.
So
it's meant to be exceptional.
I don't know much about Nikon other than they make good doorstops.
Internet seems to be praising it quite a bit. I've seen a lot of people saying, do you buy the Z6,
Mark III,
or Z5 II? So it must be decent because that Z6 Mark III is pretty good.
And a lot of people are taking it as a spare body, like how I'm bringing two Z8s to Japan. A lot of people are bringing that as a second, their second body. And then they can also have that addition of the crop factor.
The crop factor. So the Nikon Z5 Mark II is a $1,700, that's US, $1,700 camera. What does that equate to? About 14 billion Australian at the moment, given the way the economy is tanking.
Man, it went bad today. That's a good point. Hey, if you're listening to this and you're in the US, camera straps have discounted for you at the moment because our Aussie dollar is dropping so fast. You can probably buy, we're basically giving camera straps to the US. But if the tariffs come in, we might be in trouble. Anyway, in the meantime, our Aussie dollar is plummeting. So you'll notice because the prices on the Lucky Straps website will convert to your currency, but they're all based in the Australian dollar. So at the moment, the US prices will be coming down rapidly.
it's all messed up. It's all a big mess, and I don't want to get into politics.
No,
it's not. Bruce has said Greg is outside of his comfort zone. If it's not Fuji, I take offense at that, sir. But you're right.
Yeah, because it's accurate.
Needed to sound outraged for a moment. So the Z50, it's coming out at the end of it. Well, it's going to ship from the end of April, at least in the States. And Australia would be around the same time. There's not much else to say on that one. But other than, it is getting some positive views and opinions from people that have got early access to the new Z5 Mark II, which is great. It's good for Nikon. It's a more affordable Z body.
It's really settling into that system with a good product range and a good
it does seem range. To, doesn't it?
They brought that 35 1.2 out, which is also insanely heavy, but also gets insane reviews and everyone seems to be loving it other than the fact that it is very heavy.
They are missing one important lens, but
what's
that?
A 16-35 2.8.
They don't have that.
I know a couple of people that are trying to adapt it onto the Sony one onto their body.
Is that the 17 to what one's that, Jim?
17-28
2.8. Don't talk to me about 28. That's not 35.
You can go to 35
or a 14.
That focus is good on the Nikon.
The 14 to 30, still not 35, and it's not 2.8.
You don't need 35.
So they don't have an equivalent.
Samantha just shat all over your new purchases, Jim.
he hasn't bought one.
I haven't bought anything yet.
Yeah, that's true.
That's also on the list of things to talk about tonight. But we're really steaming through time.
Let's jump on that while Jim went to the effort to get the lenses out, and he does have. You have to send them back soon, I assume, Jim.
Yes.
So tell us what you got and why and what are you doing with them?
Yeah.
After the last podcast, was it the last podcast?
When you got FOMO.
I can't remember.
Yeah, you were online shopping during the last show that you were on.
I think because, was it Glean jumped off? I can't remember what happened.
I'm not sure.
Someone jumped off and then I was shopping, yeah. I called Nikon after the podcast. This is Thursday at lunchtime, 12:30. I called Nikon. And
who
Friday...
answers when you ring Nikon? Who answers?
Nikon.
Hello?
Yeah. So that's what happened. And then Nikon sent me two lenses.
Jim's got a special number for those of you following along at home.
Yeah. Old press photographers. They get special treatment because they're
photographer. Couple of lenses sent out. To test out. So I did try. I used the 14 to 30 for most of the day on. I actually had a wedding on Saturday. So I did use
it. And what did you find that was like?
It was good. I usually shoot like 28, 50, and 105 is my sort of standard focal length that I shoot. So I actually shot a lot of wider stuff than I would normally. And for this wedding, it worked well. I don't enjoy zooms. I'm not gonna pretend like I did. I still prefer the primes.
It didn't put you in a different sort of creative mood where you're like, oh, this is fun, or I'm getting different shots and I can just go from here to here.
Yeah, that bit was easier. But I do prefer the primes.
A big difference between F4 and F1.4.
Yes, or 1.2.
Yeah, 1.2. Yeah,
true.
Yes.
Yeah.
Big difference.
And even I shot a lot on that day. Actually, I got the Tamron 35 to 150, 2 to 2.8. I shot a lot of the day on that, and it was noticeably struggling in the backlit situations.
The Tamron was.
Yeah, with contrast.
Yeah.
So we're and I shot identical situations. The Nikon, the 14 to 30 lens, and it was contrast was fine, and the longer lens, which I would have thought would have had better contrast capabilities, was
it's an often talked about weak point of that lens, that it's a little bit soft in not soft a little bit yeah sorry flat in backlit situations,
yeah.
Which you so, can usually boost a bit in Lightroom, pull the blacks.
Yeah, I've just had to add a bit of dehaze and a bit of blacks and a bit more contrast than I would normally. To get it up to scratch.
Did you find it a bit wide, but 14 to 30 for weddings?
Yeah, a little bit. But I enjoy. I didn't shoot it all day at that focal length. Like, what's that? 20 mil... I'm just going through a couple of shots I shot with it.
You probably shot them all at 20 because that's the other prime that you normally shoot with.
This one's 14, 14. There's a few at 14, a few at 20. What's that? 20.5. Yeah. So
did it make you feel like Justin asked earlier? Did it make you feel kind of a bit more creative and a bit? You know, it's not what you normally shoot with. How did that feel for you? Did that feel uncomfortable or did that feel inspiring?
It kind of just felt normal. Like a couple of times I went to walk and then I was like, I can just zoom a little bit.
But I guess, you're there doing a job. You're not there for creativity and arty-farty stuff, are you? Don't get me wrong. You know what I mean? Like you didn't get that lens to go and, let's see what creative shots I can get with it. You know, it's another work tool for you, yeah?
Yeah, but that's often the case. I don't know about you, Jim, that was always often the case. Like if we bought, say, a prime or something, like it would give you a, you know, when I first got that 105, 1.4, how good is it? It was a whole new world. Like, so that day felt super creative because you were like, I could do this, I could do that. And you were running around.
I can get rid of my every background.
Yeah. It doesn't matter where they stand. Everything is obliterated at 1.4 at 105 mil.
And it's tax shot.
So a gear can definitely put you in that spot. But I guess the other thing is, Jim, you had a 16 to 35 F4 on your old system. So it's not like you've had this kind of lens before. So it's probably not, it's not that new to you. Did you shoot with the 17 to 28 2.
Nah, I kind of forgot to. I just kept it on there.
So you rang, hello, Nikon. They're like, hello, yes. DM. Yeah, and you're like, tomorrow. Can you please, I need to borrow two lenses so I can test them out. And then you forgot about one of them.
Well, no. So Nikon, when I called them, they said,
hello, Nikon.
The 14 to 30 is the lens to buy. It's an S-line lens. It's a better lens than the 17.
Yeah.
And so you didn't even try the 17 to know?
Oh, I'm going to try it tomorrow on our shoot.
Okay. We have a shoot.
I just want to know who it was designed for. Who was the 17 to 28 designed for?
I think it was designed for me because I'm going to buy the equivalent in the Canon system this week, really? I think. Yeah.
It's a lot. It's lighter than the F. Look, I don't have the grammage, but in the hand, it feels lighter than the F4, and it shouldn't. The
grammage. Is that like tonnage?
The grammage.
I don't know. The grammage.
How many grammage?
The grammage on that.
Anyway.
Yeah. Write it down.
Yeah, but it's an S-line lens.
Focal length, like...
Which
what
one?
Are you going to do 14? With 11 mil of zoom?
That's 14 to 30.
I mean, it's
not enough. The 14 to 30.
Infinitely more zoom than a prime lens.
17 to 28.
Oh, that one. Yeah, sorry.
Like what?
Well, I don't think you should at 17. To be fair.
Yeah. So for
I probably
me,
wouldn't.
Like that's, yeah. It's,
yeah.
It's
I wouldn't
still
probably use it at any other focal length.
I'm glad you bought a zoom.
You're
then.
Saying you're saying you wouldn't bother zooming into.
Well, my 16 to 35, I think I shot 98% of my photos at 16 and occasionally would zoom or then, do like.
And then when we're editing, I'd be like, Jim, why is there so much wasted space?
So you got room to crop.
We used to.
Creative freedom.
Used to happen all the time. When like we'd be shooting the guys getting ready and I'd be like, you've managed to capture the ceiling with the air conditioning vents in this shot of the groups we're getting ready. And you're like, yeah, I don't know. I was at 16.
Just crop it.
And then he just crop it out.
You don't do wedding albums, do you?
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah, he does.
With all that cropping.
He's actually quite a good photographer.
That's why he's moved to the...
I'm so glad you clarified that. Yeah,
it was hang just on. This one thing that was really...
Why don't you look at the photo? Don't bring up the photos if you want, Justin. And then you can have a look at the 14.
I haven't downloaded them.
But that's why you want the 40 megapixels, right? So you can crop.
To crop the ceiling.
I can show you what I cropped.
You should just get a GFX.
You should crop get a GFX.
Or you could just zoom.
Well, would that...
Yeah.
Or just take a step forward.
That would get rid of having to crop.
Hang on. Let me see if I can...
Jump. I can bring it up in Lightroom if you want.
Yeah,
and I can show you what I cropped out.
Bring it up in Lightroom. Let's
show us what you did. That'd be good.
Let's roast some photos. I mean, let's look at your photos.
Let's review.
It can't be as bad as my mistake of taking a $800 flight and then setting the wrong shutter speed. So you're doing okay.
At least that wasn't for a wedding, though. That would
you live alone.
True. At least I could take the flight again.
Yeah, exactly.
That's true.
Do you want to just look at the wides, or do you want to look at the whole day?
Not
a whole day. It's
through,
just a half a sneak peek.
You can scan through some of the sneak, mainly the wides, but there's a nice black. I can see some of these here. I'm gonna look at them on my computer.
Let's bring them up.
Critique them harder.
They're not terribly wide.
No, sorry, this was a Tamron.
That's not wide. At
almost 100, at 98, so almost 105.
Send that wide back. It's no good.
What is that? That photo speaks
to first look
to me.
So that's a corner. So they're actually not seeing each other. They're doing their vows.
It's a first look.
So not a first look. So they did their vows, but that's a corner of a wall. So they actually can't see each other. They're just holding hands on the corner. That's the corner. You can't really see it.
What are they practicing their vows or what?
No, they're saying their vows. So they actually had really heartfelt vows, but they didn't want to do it in front of anyone else because they knew that they'd be like he is a little tear there.
He's also a celebrant.
Yes.
Nice.
He's quite familiar with weddings and vows and all that sort of stuff.
They did a little shot of tequila.
Hey.
Now that's why.
See, I love this.
So that was shot at 20 mil. So normally I'd have a 28 on and I would have not been able to get that.
Any crop at all?
Yeah, a little.
Show us.
Not too much, actually.
Oh, that's tiny.
It's not. Yeah.
I thought I actually got rid of more.
Yeah, I was waiting. Sorry, that's perfectly shot. So you used your zoom correctly, 20mm instead of shooting at 14.
And at the moment, I think I had the wide and the 35-150. So this was 40mm. Wouldn't have been able to get. And so I was shooting this, and I didn't get. I must have got rid of a shot.
For those of you listening back later on Spotify, there's one wide shot, and then the other one is closer up. That's about all I can tell you.
Yeah. So Sam, I actually shoot for first gear. So I shoot with two cameras at once.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but it never has a wide angle on it.
Ah, okay. Do you do the
double trigger holding both at once, like Jim's talking about, where he's like he uses both of his hands and?
Oh hell no! Not holding two cameras at the same time.
Yeah. So I run left hand. So I run my wide. This obviously isn't a wide, but I run my wide in my left hand. I pre-focus it, and then jam it up against my other camera, and then can fire like this. And I fire like this. So this one's pre-focused. Doesn't matter. It's wide, so I have to crop it and straighten it sometimes. And then sometimes. Yeah. So this shot and this shot is the same, like second, same moment, but two different cameras.
And they say men can't do two things at the same time.
Well, technically, it's one thing twice.
Jim is quite talented.
I couldn't do that shit.
So, this one was actually pretty close. I didn't have to crop much. It wasn't too wonky.
Yeah. That's a second hand, using that on your other hand, that's pretty good. That's pretty well framed. I'd have that offset.
The D850 was a better, it had like straighter sides and it worked better. The Z8 isn't quite, doesn't work as well for whatever
reason. You usually get two, like those Velcro strips, and you can stick one on each camera and they can just.
Does this make you a bit of wood with a couple of quick release tripod plates on it? You can mount it up before the first kiss.
Can't you get the brackets that allow you to do sort of 3D images?
Yeah, you can.
And they allow you to join two cameras right next to each other.
Yeah. I think Jerry Jonas was the first person I saw do that, and he had a 3D wedding album that the bride and groom put like the old school 3D paper glasses on, you know, the red and – you've got what? You've got it.
I was there when he presented at WPPI this.
Yeah, that's when
they gave us all the little goggles and we put them on and watched it. It was freaking believable.
It was pretty cool.
He's not doing that
anymore. It
was
a while ago. This was 10 years ago. At least, it was very early on for this kind of stuff.
Justin, Canon question for you. You know how Canon made those lenses specific? They made a full frame and an APS-C with the two lenses. For VR stuff. Does that would that still work like an old school?
No,
you know, 3D kind of.
No. Look, there might be a way to make it work.
I was just curious.
Natively, it looks. Have you seen what it looks like? It projects image. No, it wouldn't. So you got to imagine it. It's making an image that can then be like digitally bent into a thing that you can look around in. But when it's projected, I'd be able to find it at some stage. But when you see one that has not been touched, the flat image on the sensor, if you imagine you took that 180 degree image and just flattened it out, it looks weird as on the sensor. And that's what you're getting. Yep. You're not getting two side-by-side images that are slightly different, but whether there's a way to do that, there probably is because you would have a lot of the data.
I was just curious.
I'm not 100% sure.
I mean, it's an expensive lens to test it on. But
to do that with.
Yeah.
Sorry, Jim, we were chatting while you were looking at your images. Are there any...
No, I was going to say, this is... Well, and tell me what you think. So this one's actually got... a massive billboard in it, and I had to get rid of it with the new Photoshop on the Lightroom. Sorry, AI. It's actually really. So we would have back forest? In the day.
Yeah. So can you zoom in before you go in and out so we can?
One sec.
So this
was up there.
A billboard on some bricks in between.
On some bricks. So back in the day, like, we would have got rid of that in Lightroom still. Like, I reckon I could do it.
I wouldn't have. I would have just cropped it. There's no way I would have spent that time trying to match.
What would you have done, Jim?
Back
in the old days.
Well, I would have
copy and paste a brick and just build it back up.
No, I could have done it in Lightroom.
One brick at a time.
Dustin and I were pretty good at. We were pretty good at. Taking sections and kind of doing it without because we didn't like Photoshop.
Heel tool, we just so we didn't have to go on Photoshop. We'd spend half an hour doing spots from different areas trying to rebuild something that Photoshop someone else would do in 30 seconds in Photoshop.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry, that was
that's pretty clever.
So it just did it. Did you have to tweak it or anything? Did it or did it just get it right? Like pretty that. Much. Yeah.
Well, I selected it. It was there. Selected it. I varied it because the bricks weren't right.
Okay.
And I so liked that one.
Is
that the gallery at the front of Bendigo?
That's the Capitol, yeah. So next to the gallery.
Next to the gallery, yeah.
Okay.
This is 14, I think.
14.
It would be. It's pretty wide.
Yeah, I love that. It's really cool.
It is pretty wide.
Would you get rid of that little, if you go back one, mate, see how there's that little isolated branch? No, the isolated branch popping out at the top.
Directly above the, I saw that too. Directly above the pole in the middle.
Probably pop that out. But yeah, look,
to be fair, I added these in about half an hour quickly before I had to race to gym and send it to the couple because they were, they really wanted them. So they weren't as finessed as normal.
Fair enough.
Sounds like you've been in that situation before, Samantha, where couples are really... keen
I have, but I used to, as a surprise for couples, I would print off small wedding albums for them in black and white and stick them into these leather-bound albums so that they'd walk away with an actual physical thing.
It's like we might have listened to the same podcast and things. We used to do that too. We used to print them on the night. With the Canon selfie printer we used. I don't know what printer we used.
Yeah, it was a Canon, little tiny Canon thing.
Yeah.
How good's Canon?
Pretty cool.
And you rip off this little tear off things on the side.
Yep.
And
sometimes it just doesn't print very well and you're like, why do these look terrible? And then you start troubleshooting and realize that it's defaulted to a different color profile and it's spitting out junk and you're in there trying to piece together this leather-bound book and you're like, oh, they're cutting the cake, shit. And then you run back inside and...
I made it easy and made it all black and white.
Yeah, that's clever.
Smart.
Even though I don't put black and white in typically in their wedding albums, but for this, I didn't like the colors that came out of it.
Yeah, it was a tough little printer. Yeah,
the colors weren't amazing. It was pretty bad.
Jim, this shot at the street photographer, this is absolute pure gold.
Mm.
Thanks.
The leading line
position is amazing. Power line is
just. I mean,
so you know, question: do I get rid of the power lines?
No, I'd leave them in.
So I shot. So this was the wedding was in the middle of Bendigo. No direct horizon to sunset. Sunset's actually a fair way to the right of the image. There was no clouds. There wasn't a lot of color. But I thought that the crest of the hill somewhere would work for us. And then, the cathedral, massive Bendigo cathedral, is just around the corner. Yeah. So.
No, the only thing I'd get rid of is the back of the stop sign on the right.
Yeah, and I added this pretty quick. I'd probably get rid of this sign now looking at it too.
I didn't see that, yeah.
And no, yeah, that's pretty easy.
I mean, I often shoot wide and I look for leading lines in my work for a reason. You know, it kind of talks about travel and space and time moving forward. And I love the way that this kind of sings to that a bit. You know, there's this...
Yeah.
It's kind of a crossroads almost. There's a lot going on, but in the middle of it, you know, they're lit. There's, you know, they've got everything in front of them. Like, I just think it's beautiful storytelling. I think it's a gorgeous shot. You should be really happy with it.
I think Paul's right. The power lines make the shot.
Well,
the power lines frame them. Yeah.
I knew I had to frame them like that because if I couldn't get rid of them, they had to be in the right spot of the, had to frame them right, but maybe I would get rid of it later.
I'd get rid of the power line that's running horizontally at the very back between the couple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's also, it's not a bad spot Like you could, nah, you could, nah, you could do it and have a look because it actually does.
And it's
like,
so fine.
It's not cropping them. It's not. No, it's not terrible. In a bad spot. So you could, yeah, you could have a look and be like, oh, is it better or worse? Tell me this, Sam. This photo, because I've never used. I know what tilt shift lenses do, but I've never bought one. I've never really had the need to spend that much money on a tilt shift that I probably won't use much. How would this shot look on a tilt shift? Would it look weird?
Make it go wide again.
Oh, he's doing. What are you doing, Jim? Oh, you're doing. He's doing the. We're doing some AI removal, right?
I just want to have a look.
We might get flagged on YouTube for AI content.
we'll delete that.
You would assume that YouTube's actually watching us, Justin.
So you see how that?
Hang on, go back to the.
You see how the church looks like it's falling over backwards?
Yeah.
So you would get rid of that distortion. That
but
would become...
it look would it look weird though? Because the power lines are in the foreground. Like, would it look better or worse or just different?
I think it would look better personally.
Yeah.
But the problem you have to deal with is its manual focus.
Yeah, exactly. Which would be fine for this shot because they're not moving. Jim's not moving. Yeah, just planned.
So does this work if we just crop like
just do it? I assume a tilt shift does different.
No, but now they look.
No, I don't like it at all. It looks different. They look squished.
Yeah,
I think it was perfect how it was. I wouldn't have even, to be honest, got out the. I don't even bring the tilt shift to the weddings, to be honest.
Yeah, I was just interested to know whether that's a situation where it would be useful, or is it more just purely architectural sort of stuff? But yeah,
I mean, you can use it in a much more creative way. Mm. You know how you can get that toy effect, or you can really limit your depth of field, but on an angle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can really play with it, but you got to know what you're doing because they're a bit temperamental.
Yeah.
And a wedding day's, it's
not the time to be testing.
Definitely not.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. We do it all.
But even if you know how to use it well, it's a time consuming thing to fiddle with to get right.
Yeah.
There's a YouTube that I watch. Sorry, Jay, go on.
Oh, I was just saying, Bruce says it would look correct but less dynamic, technically correct.
Yeah. There's a YouTube channel that I watch, YouTube or maybe it's just on Insta, and it's called Tiny Tokyo, and someone films from a distance streets of Tokyo and train lines and things with the tilt shift lens to make it look like a toy. It's amazing. It's so like you just sit there and watch it and just get so absorbed in it, trying to work out. Hang on, is it really? Like, is that real? Are they real little tiny people running across the screen? Because they often will speed it up to make it look, more extreme.
What's that camera lens manufacturer that make the little toy versions of it?
Lomography?
No.
They do them?
Oh, like lens? Is it Lens Baby?
Lens Baby, that's it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, they do. They made one that's move it around
very
that's
similar.
Been around for ages.
Yeah. Mm. That's how I started using that, and I loved the effect. Mm. And so now I take a tilt shift when I go overseas. So it's made the list for Tokyo.
Really?
For Japan.
You take a tilt shift overseas?
Yeah, 19 mil. So I can use it to correct the perspective. Oh, it's a mongrel. So I would wait until I know what I want to shoot and then bring it out just for that time, and then it goes back in the hotel room.
Yeah,
it wouldn't be with me every day at all.
No, you wouldn't want to stroll too far from your hotel room with it, because once you hit the streets in Tokyo, you rarely go back to your hotel room. There's just too much to see and do and eat and experience that the idea of going back and forth. Each to their own.
I think the 24 to 120 will stay there. It'll be the one that's on the camera 80% of the day.
Yeah, you've got it covered. Yeah.
And I think Glenn... Was it Glenn Lavender you had on?
Glenn,
Glenn. About he was saying how without Zooms, you just miss the shot. And I think he's right.
No, he's wrong. Anyway, moving forward, I am conscious of time. It is approaching 9 o'clock here in Victoria and New South Wales. We're now, we're still on all the same time. Daylight savings is over. Queenslanders think that we're heathens because we changed the sun somehow. A couple of things that I want to finish on. I would like to finish on. I don't know about you guys. I got notified too today that Fujifilm Australia has just announced a new gig, and it's literally called a gig. Let me just bring it up and show you. The GFX Gigs 2025. This is a new initiative. I think they're using this. Hang on, why is it not adding? There we go. This is Fujifilm Australia, but they're using it to promote the new GFX that we've been talking about at length on the podcast, because it is such a controversial camera. It is still very controversial on socials. Some of the noise has died down, but there's still some, you know, there's a couple of different camps about its value and its worth.
I read an interesting one today about it.
Did you?
Oh, I did.
All right, saga, before we get to that.
The saga continues.
Oh, it is a saga. But they are running these shows, these gigs, as a means for photographers to get involved and test this new gear, test this new camera. The first one is a fashion shoot at Melbourne. I think it's in Melbourne. The Australian Fashion Week. I'm pretty sure it's being that part of it's being held in Melbourne. There's a landscape shoot up on Mount Kosciuszko. And then there's a Opera Australia event that you can shoot. So these are three separate gigs, obviously taking place over from May to July. And basically, they're treating it like a job. So you apply, there's an assignment, there's cash rewards or paybacks. You get accommodation if you get included, return flights. Oh, I should have read this more thoroughly. Maybe I should apply.
Yeah.
Hang on, I got to go. No, I'm joking.
You've got to pay for a Japan trip.
Well, no, that's Justin's job. so we talked about this, Jim. We talked about this when Justin wasn't around. Anyway, joking, Justin. We don't talk about you when you're not around. But yeah, this is what Fujifilm are doing. They're introducing these new gigs. I think what's kind of, for me, what stands out the most is the fact that they managed to get a hipster on top of a mountain wearing dress shoes. So, you know.
Yeah.
Clearly an influencer, professional photographer there, that one. And he's a ginger too, so, you know.
I wonder who they're trying to appeal to, because that, you know, that in no way appeals to me. It's interesting, because I wonder, you know, for a GFX shooter, is this appealing in any way? You know, maybe for an X-series shooter, uni student studying for, you know, like they're not buying GFXs is what I mean. The GFXs are very expensive.
So yeah, you get to try the camera. So it's not for people that own them. Is that right? It's for to come and try.
I'm trying to understand. I only just got this as we were going live. Celebrate the launch of the GFX. GFX is not looking for three photographers. Sorry. So it's only just for three photographers. So this is why I should read things before I start talking. To experience a new camera with three all expenses paid photography assignments, one assignment per photographer. So basically, I think you submit a folio of work. Yep. You've got to prove that you're kind of worthy. You've got to provide some feedback and some proof that you can actually, you know, that you've got reach. And I think they're looking for new influencers, to be honest.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, whether it's not so much about attracting the potential GFX buyer. Yeah, it's about attracting a GFX influencer.
But if you're a Fuji X shooter and you do a good job on social media, or you're a, you know, you're an influencer, you're a travel photographer or whatever you may be, and you're using an X100 VI or whatever Fuji camera you're using, and if you've got some merit, then this is an ideal opportunity.
I mean, you'd be crazy not to apply. Like, it doesn't cost anything to apply. So
I don't believe it does. No.
If you've got the what they require to apply, and you know, a reasonable quality of work in that.
And look, they choose three photographers, but potentially they're getting information for another 10,000 who could potentially help promote this product in the future. So, it's not without its benefits to Fujifilm. Anyway, that's just the latest. We will be joined not next Monday, the one after, or is it this one?
I don't know.
Anyway. John Street's coming to join us, our friend John, who's been on the show before. John was one of the first, I think one of the first people in non-Fujifilm employees in Australia to get his hands on the GFX. He was part of the GFX project and he's a street photographer. He's coming on the show in a couple of weeks to talk about that experience of what it was like to actually be invited by Fujifilm Australia to be the first to get your hands on this camera, to actually be part of the marketing campaign, to run some workshops, to run some events, to, you know, be a big part of their social media around the release of a brand new GFX camera. It's a big deal for,
you know, a street kid like John. And, you know, I'm incredibly proud of him. I think it's a huge achievement. For someone who's not your typical pro photographer to be included at such a high level.
Hopefully we'll be able to look at some of his images. I don't know whether we could maybe even get some of the files or something, you know, like just leave larger JPEGs or something, because then we can zoom in while we're chatting to him and just see all the glory of the 100 megapixels. Completely unrelated, but Bruce has just made a comment. Do you think Greg could do an episode without mentioning Fujifilm once, like a challenge? Yeah.
I'm with you, Bruce.
Or Japan. I know I mentioned Japan a lot.
Well, I was going to say, all right.
I don't have a lot going for me. You see, I've got to cling to the past.
We will do a Lucky Straps trip to Japan, funded by me with Greg, if he doesn't mention Fujifilm on the show before December 31st this year.
Come on, that's not fair. You know, I'm not going to survive that.
It's tricky when your job is also to talk about the news of any cameras that are released. So that's going to be tough. You're going to have to talk in code or something.
There's a camera brand we can't.
Yeah, a camera brand say. That.
But you all know which one I'm talking
can't
about.
Can't be named.
It can't be named.
It's like the Voldemort rhymes with
Smoogie film.
I've got a question for Justin.
Ah, hit me, yeah.
One of your Lucky Straps, I heard you say that they have a quick release function. Do. How do they, what sort of quick release?
It's okay. It's a quicker release than it is attach. I'll show you. I'll bring a Nikon.
I've got one on a Fujifilm camera here if you wanted me to show you that. What did you just drop?
That wasn't nothing. The R5 Mark II, was it?
Hopefully it was one of those wooden cameras.
No, that was an F5, which as anyone that's had one will know, that falling does not matter.
How's the house?
I think my floor is dangerous.
Yeah, it's the floor, more importantly.
But yeah, it's fine. This is going to be hard to show in this lighting. I've set it up for drama, not for showing a quick release system. Basically,
that's all over, isn't it? You're all about the drama.
Can't see. Hang on.
Here's one that's contrasty.
Some light on the situation.
Who would have thought Greg could have the best light?
Hey, I don't know. Turn the light on.
Hang on. Oh yeah, Greg's onto it.
Okay.
All right. So, Sam, this is the strap. This is my BFOP strap. If you can see that, sorry. It's BFOP.
Hey, look, nice. Foil.
Anyway,
custom embossing.
I know. Wonder who did that. Some champion. So basically the quick release, it's an alloy piece of hardware. Okay. It's got a gate that pops open a bit like a carabiner. You'd be familiar with those. But it's also got a lock in here that stops the gate from popping open like a carabiner. It's completely locked. And so what happens is you can just slip this either through the staple type lug that's on your camera body. I don't know what Nikons have.
They have a little triangle.
They got the triangle ring, yeah. So
okay, so you just slide that through the ring and then you loop it through and you undo the lock and you... Okay. I'm sorry, this is really hard to do.
No, that's
much easier when it's on a camera.
Yeah, when you got the weight of a camera. But these are strong. These are slash proof.
Greg big. Melbourne's had these. Look, Greg's huge.
Look at that.
Do you have any that attach to the bottom of the camera?
So you can attach it to like a tripod plate or
you could you could attach it to a tripod plate, but they don't. They would have to depends how, so the way that I often do one to the tripod plate and one to the side of the camera.
Like a
so
QD mount or a screw in.
Like I use Arca Swiss plates and just attach that strap just attaches to a normal.
I use the Arca Swiss plates too.
Yeah, but if you're talking about like that with an actual QD
little slots in here.
Yeah, the QD like the little round one, the bigger of those round holes on the bottom.
So we have got some custom with Jim so and me.
You might notice that mine are heavily used.
We've got prototype QD straps that have been in the works for a long time and we just haven't brought them to market because we can't even keep up with our current strap range. But we have, Jim's got a dual strap. I've got a dual strap. A random guy in the US has a dual strap and they're the only ones that exist.
So some random guy in the US gets a dual strap and I can't get a thin strap for my Fujifilm.
I made it myself. And that's right.
It's the best dual camera strap ever.
that no one has except for us.
I haven't. And I've shot with it. I've shot a lot of weddings with it.
I was going to say, how many weddings do you reckon you shot with that?
I reckon I've had it. Is it 100? 5 years now?
Yeah.
Would I have had it for 5 years?
Probably.
I don't think anything beats a leather strap, to be honest.
No. And the way that they... So have you got
advertising
the QD... Rates. Have you got the QD clips? Like,
yeah.
You know how fast they are in and out?
Yeah, it's awesome.
So
yeah.
The jewel strap is literally has that. A lot of people will freak out because it doesn't seem like a lot holding the camera on.
Mm.
I pull mine in and out all day because sometimes I'm using my camera up high, down low, off my body, put it down, whatever. Put it back in, quick pull. I know that it's safe. A lot of people would want to run a tether on theirs, but I don't. And
Don't tell anyone.
There's only one thing that's missing.
Don't post this online.
We can't sell these.
It's missing one thing, Justin.
What's that?
It missing?
Just a little bit of padding built into where the shoulders are.
It doesn't need it.
They're wired.
Yeah, but it makes it better.
It tapers. No, trust me. I can put padding in there if you want, but it won't make any difference on the way these sit. But you definitely could. But yeah, it tapers out a little bit where the shoulders are, but the straps are really thin. Most of the people that make these leather, like dual straps, make them too thick. You feel like a Clydesdale horse with all these.
They're really got a thousand
clips. We even call it a Clydesdale.
Well,
the one that I've got is a Clydesdale.
Oh,
yours
is.
Pro.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's like I felt the weight. This was half the weight of a similar but different one. Probably more than half the weight, actually.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is really these clips that make the difference because of how fast they are to use, which you obviously know. Don't tell anyone this isn't released. You can't buy
it. So when are you making them? Email me.
It's a long story.
We've been trying to make them for a long time.
It's a long story and too long for this particular podcast.
Yeah. I ask him every week.
Yeah. And I ask him about the small strap for my Fuji camera.
You're on the back of the list, Greg. This is...
Whatever.
I'm trying to get this thing on because I know how good it is.
Yeah, it'll send. There's no doubt.
I
restacked this shelf today and I've already...
And with the other companies all being US brands, now with the US dollar, no one's got any alternative.
That's a good point. I hadn't thought about that.
Launching tomorrow, the lucky...
The brand that I have, I think it retails now, I want to say it would be over 800 Australian dollars now.
What? Wow.
That's a lot, isn't it?
That's outrageous.
I didn't buy it at that price, but that's what...
But that's
now, if you look at the conversion rates, like before it's still in the 600 odd dollar mark. It wasn't cheap.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure it's good quality. Like, yeah, it would be nice.
It's comfortable
for that,
as anything. Yeah, it's so comfortable.
But it's not a lucky strap, is it, Sam?
Well, that's why I'm asking him to make it.
I'm working on it.
I'm happy to buy Australian made. And now with the US dollar in the toilet,
even happier.
I'll set a meeting for tomorrow, Sam.
We're working on it.
I just feel one more person to hate shit on Justin's good.
Look.
All my cameras.
I know. Is everything okay?
The F5's fine.
Yeah.
And Nikon cameras you can drop. You don't have to worry about Nikon cameras. No, I've dropped my camera onto the Colosseum floor, and the only thing I broke was the hood.
Really? So I thought you were going to say the Colosseum floor.
Hood and the UV filter.
Yeah.
It literally didn't stop a beat. Just kept on going, lens and body.
Yeah. Justin jumped in a pool with his a couple of weeks ago with his R5 Mark II, and it's still working, I assume.
That's a Canon, though. There's a Canon. But still, Nikon wouldn't have been able to handle the moisture.
That's pretty impressive.
Oh, bullshit.
You've
got to say.
Fully dunked, fully submerged.
Next wedding, you're both jumping in the pool, okay?
Do you know what I've been teaching people to do with their cameras when they get salt water on top of them?
What's that?
I tell people to get your water bottle and dump the entire water bottle on top of the camera and then
get the salt off.
Yeah, to get the salt off and then put your microfiber towel and dry it. And then that's happened twice with my Z8. And both times I've been able to continue shooting.
Yeah.
No downtime, nothing.
Yeah, the salt.
It's more
bad,
the
It's more leaving it's the salt. Like leaving it overnight. Yeah. That's where it's gonna. You're never gonna recover from that. But speaking of recovery, I need some time to think about everything we've covered off tonight. We will wrap up on that note. Sam, I just want to thank you for your time, for joining us on the Camera Life podcast, and for sharing with us not only part of your story. I know there's a lot more to it, but more importantly, sharing with us your current project with your book. And I think I speak for everyone. I generally don't like to do that, but I am a man. I do like to mansplain. A photographer's guide, The Great Ocean Road and Otways, is an excellent companion for anyone looking to travel through that region of Victoria and undertake some serious photography and get it right. Make the most of your trip. We're going to drop the links to the Kickstarter as well as your website in our show notes. I think, you know, we wish you all the best. It's a huge project and a massive undertaking. Yeah, massive. And as Jim said earlier on, you've done the hard yards. You've really put in the hard work. And I think, you know, the proof is in the pudding. We just need to get some people's eyes on it so that you can get it published. So we wish you all the best.
Thank you, boys.
And if anyone watching or listening wants to get some more info, hit up the links. And if you've got any direct questions, let me know and I can get them through to Sam. But on that note, I think we need to wrap up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've gone way past our. This was supposed to be a quick 1 hour show every week, is what I told the guys. And I don't think we've had one under an hour and a half yet.
Greg told me 2 hours.
No, that's the Thursday usually. So it can be up to 2 hours.
Yeah.
Greg had more Fuji content he wanted to pump in there.
Yeah, but
thanks to all of you people in the chat tonight. You've kept it lively and fun. Rick says, great show. Thank you, Samantha. Philip says, thanks all. Good show. Thanks, Sam. Bruce says, thanks, Sam. Thanks, Justin and Jim. Begrudgingly, thanks Greg. that is the comment of the night. Yeah. With that, I'm gonna roll our song.
Yeah.
See you guys on Thursday.
Yeah. Have a good week, everybody.
Oh, I'm such nerds.